So I'm thankful for the scars, 'cause without them I wouldn't know your heart.
Hello there, and welcome back to episode number 5 of the Spiraling Podcast. This is part 2 of our interview with Harold Boggs. Again, Harold, just a little background from him again from our last episode. He is a licensed therapist at the Houston Center for Christian Counseling, also a good friend of Jason and ours and his sponsor. So just a little background on him. Please enjoy part 2 of this interview. Thank you guys so much for coming out. Be sure you can remember, you can catch us on where all podcasts can be found on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcast, all of it. Watch us, follow us, leave us a review. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. I'm going to start the show. Welcome to episode number 4 of the Spiraling Podcast. I am your host, Jackson Walls. Today, we are joined by Haven Boggs, known to his family as Haven, known to his professional life as Harold Boggs. Harold is Jason's sponsor, and he's very kind enough to join us today on the show. We also have Jason, as always. But Harold, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Things have gotten very busy. Which is good news.
Yes. Good, busy, good, I hope.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I think we're very excited. You're our first guest. It's just been me and Jason on the past couple of episodes, and we are thrilled to have somebody else here with us. Just so we can kind of pick your brain a little bit, kind of about some different topics. But I was actually curious. I was hoping maybe you can give our listeners a little bit about your history and your current credentials.
Yes, I graduated from Portland State. Let me start at the beginning and kind of give you an overview of how my recovery has gone. I'm a person in recovery. Okay. And I'm grateful to God for every day of my recovery. I passed the 11,000 day mark some months ago, and every day of that's a gift from God. So the story begins, the important part of the story begins when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. I was molested by my older half brother.
Oh my!
We lived in the same household. I knew him as my brother, and that molestation, sexual molestation, stopped when I was 11 because he went in the Navy, and I kept it a secret. I didn't know who to tell. When a child goes through something like that, it's very confusing for the child because you look up to your older brother, but at the same time, you know this is wrong, but some of it feels good. So it sets up what's called cognitive dissonance, and it's very difficult for kids. So I just kept it a secret. And when I turned 20, I started drinking, and the drinking was heavy drinking. I had to keep the lid on that jar of shame. So that continued. I was depressed. I didn't know where to go with the story of being molested. And so that continued 20 years. When I turned 40, a friend of mine from high school died.
Oh, wow.
And the light bulb finally came on, and I decided to quit my drinking and drugging. I was experimenting with drugs, and I realized how dangerous it was, so I quit everything cold turkey. Now, I don't recommend that for people who are drinking daily. I wasn't drinking daily at the time.
Okay.
But when I started drinking, I couldn't predict where it would stop. So that indicates a dependency. And So when people are drinking daily and they stop cold turkey, they can have a seizure and actually die. I lost a client in 2011 that way. So hardly anybody knows that. So if you know someone that's drinking daily and they want to quit, tell them not to stop cold turkey. So I quit, and my recovery has three big parts. Part one is stopping. It's very important to completely stop after you've crossed that line and you've become dependent. Part two of recovery is to learn how to stay stopped, and that's 20 times as hard as stopping because of my selfishness and my pride. And the best way I know of to level the pride and get some humility and stop the selfishness and get some empathy back is working the 12 steps. They were borrowed from the Bible in 1935. So wow. I wandered into an AA meeting and found someone to guide me through. This was up in the Northwest, and I worked the steps and with his guidance. So I worked steps 1 through 11, and that's 49% of the program. Then part 3 of my recovery is step 12. I reached back to help someone newer in the program work their steps. That's when my steps clicked in, not until. So that's part 3 of the program. That's step 12, and we have a motto: we only get to keep what we give away.
Interesting.
So that's an overview of my program, my recovery. I started that December 28th, 1987. So as of now, I have over 11,000 days, and it's every one of those is a gift from God. So with my recovery, I lost a marriage.
I'm sorry.
And that often occurs after recovery begins. It's so complicated. But I also took that opportunity to go back to college, finish my bachelor's, go for my master's, and become a family therapist formally, because I'd worked in a volunteer capacity in the state prisons in the state hospitals, mental hospitals, and in many church settings.
Yeah.
But I formalized it by getting a license in marriage and family therapy and a certification as a drug counselor and my LPC license, licensed professional counselor. And so that's where I work now full time. I'm 72, but the
I don't look 72, my friend. You look quite young.
Retiring anytime soon.
Wow, that's a powerful story. What an introduction. Thank you for sharing that with us. Jason, just a quick question for you. How did you get to meet this wonderful gentleman?
Many, many years ago. Harold, probably 7-8 years ago now.
Yes.
Yeah. So throughout my addiction and alcohol abuse, I tried to stop several times throughout the years. And the one thing that I've always really loved about Harold was every time that I would say I'm going to stop, he was there to help me. It really provided me encouragement to say, when I finally decided to stop and say, I'm done. Harold was there to welcome me back into the program. And this last time just clicked. I've gone 2 years now, and I do not have any urges. And I know one thing that Harold always tells me is when I stop having the urges, that's when it's most dangerous. Because Satan will come in and try to tempt me. But to be honest with you, I don't have any of those temptations. You know, my wife can have drinks in front of me. It doesn't bother me. I smell it, and it just makes me nauseous. So the one thing that really clicked with me was 3 months into my sobriety was being diagnosed with cancer. And I contribute my cancer to all the drugs and alcohol that I put in my body over the years. Right. And I think that's why it's so easy now. And it's so easy for me to say, you know, drugs, I don't need them. Alcohol, I don't need it. I'm a sugar fiend. I always have to have something sweet around me. But that's from the alcohol from over the years. But I don't have any. I still have dreams every once in a while of drinking or drugging. But I wake up and I'm in reality, and I put my 2 feet off the bed and say, today's a new day, and I'm going to stay sober today. And that's one thing that Harold has taught me throughout the years.
Every morning I still get up, and the first thing I do is say, God, no matter what happens today, absolutely no alcohol, no drugs, nothing mind altering. And that's how it's done. We take one day at a time. I can do something for one day that I could never dream of doing long term. And so that's how we take it, one day at a time. Sometimes when during a lot of stress, it's 1 hour at a time.
Yeah. Or 1 minute at a time, minute by minute.
Yeah. When you think about it, 11,000 days, right?
Yes.
For you, Harold, that's a super long time. If you had at the beginning of this, is I'm going to go 11,000 days without anything. That's kind of mind numbing to think about. It's hard to approach, to even wrap your head around it. But if you say 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time, 1 day at a time, you can. It's a lot easier to get through it. Wow. And incredibly and powerful.
What Jason and I have talked about many times is staying alert, because while we're in recovery,
right,
the enemy is out there in the parking lot doing push-ups, getting stronger, waiting for an opening. And there, my sponsor told me this early on. He said a number of really great things. The main thing that he said to me that helped me the most is, Harold, your drinking is a search for God at the wrong address. That really helped me. He also said, look out for overconfidence. The enemy's going to speak up and say to you at some point, hey, look at you. You've arrived. You've got this thing. You can test it out. You can drink. Right. Just
that. Yeah.
And I said, so that hit me at the 5-year mark. I didn't know when it was coming, but my sponsor got me prepared for it. So yes, at the 5-year mark, the enemy said to me, look at you, 60 months without a drink, a drug, nothing. Just you ought to celebrate. You ought to test it out, drink a little bit. You can handle it. Trust me.
Yeah.
So I said no to that. I was looking for it coming. So he wasn't defeated, though. He goes around the side door and says, well, okay, you don't drink, you don't test it out, but at least you don't have to keep working with those knucklehead new guys, and you don't need to be talking to your sponsor all the time, and you don't need to go to so many meetings. You can put up your feet and coast a while. You can relax. And that sounded pretty good. A couple of days turned into a couple of weeks like that. Well, luckily, my friends in the program looked around, where's Harold? We need him in here. Came and got me by the collar, pulled me back in and said, look, we need you to work with these new guys, and got me. They saved my life.
They got because, you back into it, yeah.
I have a friend of a friend who he had 22 years, and the enemy voice said, hey, you don't need so many meetings now. You've arrived. And so he quit going to meetings and he quit doing the things that keep us in the program.
Sure.
And within 6 months, he not only drank again, wrecked his car, lost his job, lost his house, lost his family. He was living in his mom's basement. And this is all within 6 months.
Wow.
After 22 years of solid recovery, they found him dead with a needle in his arm. He didn't even use drugs before, but he died.
That's how quick it can turn.
So the enemy is vigilant and he is patient. So we've got to keep our guard up. That's my method, my message for everybody.
Wow, that's a powerful message, especially when you tell that story of 22 years of in recovery, and then how fast it can turn. You know, we blink an eye and 6 months is gone.
That's it.
That's absolutely crazy. I do have another question though for you. It is what kinds of, because you know you're practicing, you've been practicing for a while at the Houston Center for Christian Counseling. What kinds of addictions are you seeing on a daily basis?
Well, the mostly I see compulsive sexual behavior.
Really?
Here's what we're finding, that if there's a drug problem or an alcohol problem, 90% of the time behind that is secret sexual sin. And that in what I'm beginning to see is that's really the basis. We're also seeing a lot of pain pill addiction. Yeah. And it's so easy because the doctors haven't warned us. Well, the doctors have been lied to by the big pharmaceutical companies, and then they've passed that lie along. They've been deceived. They're deceiving their patients, and the way it works is we take the pills exactly the way the doctor said to, and. Mm-hmm. When we have physical pain, we take the medications and the pain eats up the medications. Then after the pain subsides, the doctor forgets to mention that we should taper down on the pain pills. So we keep taking the medications, and the medications also work on emotional pain. That's when we've crossed a line and we become dependent on the medications, because the brain has built into it the automatic ability to get used to the chemicals we're putting in there. And after a while, we need the chemicals just to get back up to normal, because the body's developed some tolerance to the medication. So the enemy voice says, oh, you need more pills to get the same effect. And we've end up crossing the line. So I see a lot of people addicted to pain pills, a lot of people who drink too much. Yeah. It's smiled upon in our culture. The government gets a lot of tax dollars from alcohol, but one of the problems with alcohol is it's dangerous to drink. It's also dangerous to stop. As I mentioned earlier, if a daily drinker stops suddenly, cold turkey, he can get a seizure and die. Wow. And so there's a lot of danger. And here's a fact. Every day, more people die from alcohol overdose than all the drug overdoses put together, but it's never on the news.
Washington, you don't hear a lot about it.
Washington, D.C. wants their tax dollars. So alcohol, drugs, and after the pain pills, after the prescriptions run out, people buy street drugs. They buy heroin on the street. You never know what's in that. It's not prepared by a pharmacy.
Right.
There's a lot of heroin addicts. Then the heroin addicts want to get off of their heroin, so they take Suboxone at a Suboxone clinic. That's very difficult to get off of, although it's not as quite as dangerous as heroin because it keeps... So it's just multiple things that feed one another.
Sure.
And an attack by the enemy. I get to talk to a lot of people who believe in God, and it seems to me that people who believe in God have extra temptation because the enemy doesn't like believers. He hates God and he hates believers, so he wants to take believers out. So that's a factor also.
Right.
Also, I see people who do a lot of gambling. Okay. And some people, like my dad, who rest his soul, he was addicted to rage. Rage gives you a definite high.
And, oh, wow, that's interesting. I haven't heard of that.
He quit drinking. He drank like a fish, but he never got recovery. When he quit drinking, he would rage. And my folks divorced when I was 12, and that was a significant factor in that. I was relieved when they got divorced because the war zone stopped.
Yeah.
Both mom and my dad had rage. It was awful.
Wow. Which one, you spoke about a lot of different kinds of addiction. Which one concerns you the most, if you had to pick?
Well, it's the secret sexual sin.
Okay.
That one is... Oh, and I forgot to mention food addictions.
Oh, yeah.
With alcohol or drugs, we can completely stop. And that's really an important part of my recovery, is total abstinence. But what do we do when we're addicted to, when we're medicating our emotions with food? We can't completely stop.
Right.
And so... that calls for a special type of approach, special treatment, where we learn to think about food differently. It's very difficult. And here is the bottom line. Food addiction problems, eating disorders, are the most fatal addictions of all.
Yeah.
There's 15% mortality rate with food addictions. So that concerns me the most. And there's also a factor with all addiction and recovery that there's quite a high suicide rate. And so I'm an expert in suicide prevention, so that's very worrisome too. Heart disease is on the decline and cancer treatments are really great. But when it comes to suicide, that's on the rise. And that's, wow. That's a big worry.
Yeah, that's definitely troubling. I also know that you treat PTSD.
Yes.
When we think of that, we think of the most common. We think of that in the military. But what other incidents can cause this, and how do you help somebody that's been through that?
That's a terrific question. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, is the label that we use when someone's been through a traumatic event,
yeah,
like that bomb that went off in that factory that exploded in Houston several months ago. I've had several clients with PTSD from that. That's a one-time event.
Yeah.
I've many clients who were in a terrible car wreck, and now they have a lot of stress and tension when they drive. That's PTSD. In the military, people have PTSD from being blown up or being shot. Now there's a new diagnosis, even newer than PTSD. It's so new that it's not in the new diagnostic manual, the DSM-5. You can go on the internet and look up all these diagnoses and get a lot of great information about the DSM-5, Diagnostic Statistic Manual 5.
Okay.
But there's a new diagnosis called complex PTSD. Complex PTSD is the type of situation that I lived through, being molested at ages 8 and 9, 10 and 11, dozens and dozens of incidents that were stressful and confusing. So that's complex PTSD. And fortunately, the same solutions fit all these various stressors. And that is to, that's a, it's, well, to really summarize it in one sentence, it's developing a closer walk with God. Step 11, the 12th step, says, I, through prayer and meditation, I increased my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out.
Right.
So the, that is the solution, to learn about God and then learn to walk with God. And that there are many ways to do that. One of the best ways is the 12-step program. It's been adopted and adapted for use with people with gambling problems, drug problems. We've got Marijuana Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, and all kinds of different adaptations of the 12 steps, but the whole idea is to turn your life over to God. And there's some terrific videos out there on the internet, on YouTube, called I Am Second. And it's little 7-minute stories about people who've turned their lives over to God, and they tell their story in a very brief video. Terrific to watch that.
I've seen a lot of different commercials, I Am Second, especially when I watch, I'm a big fan of the NFL. And so whenever I watch those games, I see a lot of those commercials, especially coming up during halftime or, you know, the first quarter break. But speaking of I Am Second and turning your life over to God, I know that was a big part in Jason's recovery. And his keys to success. So how do you, when it comes to the counseling and turning yourself over to God, and Jason, maybe you can weigh on this a little bit, how do you inject that into your counseling services, Harold? And maybe Jason, you can speak about your experiences with that too, with your counseling.
That's great. Do you want to weigh in on that, Jason?
Sure. Yeah. So the first thing that I had to realize, and as part of the 12 steps, is completely surrendering yourself to God. What that means is you give up everything, your day-to-day actions, your thoughts, everything. You give it up to God and put it in God's hands. Once you completely surrender yourself to God is whenever the healing process starts, and the recovery actually begins. I'm a firm believer in that. Until you can have that relationship with God, you're going to be tempted by Satan. I've shared with you guys some of my tribulations over the last couple of weeks with family issues, but you know, I'm tempted every day. I'm tempted with loss of family members, loss of family friends. Kids might have cancer. It's nonstop. And what I contribute to that is it's Satan tempting me. But you know what I've said for the last year and a half, 2 years since I was diagnosed with the cancer, I completely turned my life over to God. And that is what has allowed me to continue to walk on the path of sobriety and say, I'm not gonna drink, I'm not gonna drug. I'm gonna continue to be righteous. Doesn't mean I don't have issues with my wife. Yeah, we argue, we fight. Any couple that lives and works together 24/7 is gonna have those issues. But at the end of the day, I love my family. I love myself and I love God. To put God first is what really matters.
That's a good way of putting it, Jace. The first step of the 12 steps says, we admitted that we were powerless over our compulsive behaviors, that our lives were unmanageable, which to me means once I start drinking, I can't predict where it'll stop. So that's unmanageability, and that's powerlessness. Step two says, came to believe that a power greater than us could restore us to sanity. And step three says, we made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God. Mm-hmm. So that forms the beginning of recovery. And step 11, as I said earlier, is where we use prayer and meditation to increase our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So the program is really all about God. It's all about also observing yourself. And the step four is an inventory where we observe ourselves and we take stock of where we are, where we're going. That's a very important step. It stops a lot of people. It's difficult, but we help you through it. We help one another through it.
Yeah.
Step five is where we admit our wrongs to God, to ourselves, and to another person. And then step six, seven, eight, and nine is where we make amends to people we've harmed. Very important to get our integrity back and make amends and make up for what we've done.
Yeah.
Step 11 is more closeness with God. And then step 12 is where we pass this along and we help other people, newer people, through their 12 steps. So that's what I do, both in the office and in public. I do a lot of public service. I still go to meetings. That's where I find new people that I can help. And our motto is, we only get to keep what we give away. I want to keep it, so I continually give it away. Now, let me talk a little bit about the center where I work. It's called the Houston Center for Christian Counseling.
Please.
It's the most fantastic place I've ever worked. It is really something. Now, we do not force religion on anyone. Sure. My assignment is to come alongside people where they are and help them with their next step. So I see people who are Muslim, who are atheist, who Buddhist, religions from all over the world. I see Christians, people who have completely turned their back on the church. They feel hurt by the church. It's so I meet them where they are, really listen carefully, and then help them with their next step. For people that don't want anything to do with God, recovery is available to them too, because what we're talking about with that step one, that we're powerless over our tendency to do the wrong thing, our compulsive behavior, every one of us has this part that is self-sabotage. And I call it the enemy voice, but it doesn't matter what we call it. We've all got it. We're stuck with it as long as we're in this human form. And we've got to learn to deal with it. We've got to learn to talk to it, in my opinion. And so we can end the self-sabotage. Like Jason was saying before, we are not perfect, but what we watch for is progress. Progress, not perfection. And as long as we're making progress, see, with recovery, you're either moving backwards or you're moving forward. There are no standing still. And so to move forward, we got to be making progress. And we always work on our conscious contact. We've got to work. We've got to become our best self, learn how to stop self-sabotaging. That's very, very important, because part of what I was doing for those 20 years of my drinking and drugging, I was punishing myself. I knew what I had done as a child was wrong, and so I found ways to punish myself, the drinking, the drugging, leading a double life. I was one guy by night and a different guy by day. And that just doesn't fly. That is destined to fall apart. Being double-minded is what the Bible calls it. Living a double life is what I called it. Now I can be the same guy all the time. I have my integrity back. I've made my amends, and I continue to make living amends to people I've harmed. And it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I can really tell the passion that you have, especially the way your eyes lit up when you started talking about the Houston Center for Christian Counseling. Your eyes went up. It tells me you truly believe that what you guys do there is great, and I fully believe it, and I can appreciate the passion. I can appreciate the wanting to pay it forward. But what is the first counseling session like with somebody brand new? What are your goals in that initial counseling session? What can a person expect from that?
Well, I have two things in mind when I'm working with a new person.
Okay.
First is to get to know them and really listen.
Yeah.
Very few people are really listened to these days. It's almost a lost art. So I listen to their story. I take notes and I let them know. I self-disclose. And it's controversial. Some counselors do, some don't. But I've found it's really, really necessary. I'm not shy about recovery anymore. And I'm not shy about my story. I'm not embarrassed. It's one of the stepping stones. The suffering that I went through really led me to, before being a family therapist, I was in real estate, and I ran a farm with my brothers, and we grew food, we fed people, and I helped people find homes. Those aren't bad jobs,
right?
But God really had a lot better for me, and once I got into recovery, I could recognize, wow, I'm not supposed to be in real estate. I'm supposed to help people, especially kids. And one of the best ways I've found to help kids is to help families. You know, a week has 168 hours in it. And so if I'm helping a child, I thought about being a child psychologist, but if I'm helping a child one out of 168 hours, that will have some beneficial effect. But if I can help his parents, I'm helping all 168 hours.
Yeah.
So
it's a good way to look at it.
So the first session, I get to know them, and then I self-disclose and help them understand what recovery looks like and how all of that works. And so I try to paint a picture of what recovery is about, and try to help them know that they are not alone. A lot of people feel very shameful, and they feel very alone. And so we try to chase away those feelings and help them know that there is hope. There is hope.
Hope is super important. Who's super important? Me and Jason were talking about that in a couple episodes ago. Jason, what was your first session like with Harold?
Oh, I had a lot of first sessions with Harold.
I guess the very first one then.
Yeah, it was probably a blur, wasn't it, Jason?
It was a blur. I don't remember a whole lot of it. To be honest with you, the first session, I was probably intoxicated. There were a lot of sessions that I went in to talk to Harold and ask Harold for help. I remember one instance. There was an evening that you met me at the office about 11 o'clock at night, and I asked you to come out to my car with me, and I unloaded bottle after bottle after bottle. Do you remember that, Harold?
Yes, I do. And so does my boss.
Yeah.
I had put those bottles in the fridge so that we can find some use for them. The next morning, my boss, who's in recovery, to say that, found those bottles in there, and He thought, what is this?
I can only imagine the look on his face.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's probably one of my most memorable restarts into the program was giving up all my liquor.
But I've got to acknowledge, Jason, you kept coming back, and that took a lot of courage, a lot of courage, and it paid off.
It did pay off, yeah. Yeah, and I remember, even as recently as a year ago, you and I had the conversation about my pain medicine, and I was honestly worried about the pain medicine because, being a cancer patient and being in pain, it's an unlimited supply. You ask for it, they give it to you. And that was a hard time, is getting off the pain meds and coping with my cancer, so.
And you and Kristen work on that as a team.
Yeah.
You see, the problem when we take our pain meds or when we drink is that it causes a little brain fog, and sometimes we can't remember whether we've taken our medications or taken how many drinks we've had. So it's important to work as a team. My wife and I work as a team. You two work as a team. That's really great.
Yeah, and I've gotten over the pain medication, and I only take it when I absolutely have to. I've gone into using other things to manage the pain, but the pain medicine itself, it makes you angry, and it you're talking about rage, and it really causes rage within you. Yeah, Kristen's over here shaking her head. Yeah,
giving that affirmation.
Hi, Kristen.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I really had to stop. And I don't think I was fully addicted to it, but I could tell that if I continued on it was going to be a problem. And I was going back down that road.
One of the guidelines is if whatever you're using is causing a personality change, that's a signal. That's a signal. Watch out. So good for you, Jason.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Very good. Very good. Jason, what has been the best advice you've ever received from Harold?
One day at a time. Because I use that. Anybody that I talk to that is that's entering their journey into recovery is take it one day at a time. And
yeah,
it was a long time for me to admit to Kristen that I can go without having a drink again. And sometimes she still asks me, and I'm like, it's one day at a time. And that was my response to her. She would ask me, are you ever going to have a drink again? And I was.
So I'm